Clifford the Big Red Dog, Garfield and Odie, The Littlest Hobo, Lassie, Balto, Air Bud, Salem, and of course Binks from Hocus Pocus. These are just a few iconic companion animals featured in pop culture over the years. While some are animated, others are real animals. And as any pet owner knows, trying to get your furry friend to do anything on command with a camera in front of them is next to impossible. So how exactly do movies and TV shows manage to get so many animals to give award-winning performances? Well, our guest is here to give us the inside scoop. Welcome to another episode of the Nova Scotia SPCA podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Lyon. I'm here with Adina McCrae, who works with animals in film and television. Adina McCrae has been a professional dog walker and dog trainer for over 20 years. She coaches agility enthusiasts through Sublime Canine Services and walks dogs under her business, Dogs on the Go. But she is also an animal coordinator in the Nova Scotia film industry and belongs to the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Union 849. Adina, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sarah. It's great to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here. We were just talking before we started recording about how big the film industry is in Nova Scotia and how we have mutual people.
Yeah, 7 degrees of separation always in Nova Scotia, and it goes down to about 4 when you get to the film industry, I think.
It's amazing. We are going to talk about your work in the film industry, but we always, when we have a new guest, we try to do a rapid fire game to get to know you, get some of any, you know, get relaxed into the podcast. Are you ready for a game?
I'm ready.
Of Fetch?
Bring it.
All right. So, Adina, who was your first pet?
My first pet as an adult that I owned myself was Buddy, and he was a boxer pit bull mix that I adopted from the Bidwell shelter.
If animals could talk, who would be the nicest?
The nicest, I've got to give it to the dogs. Most dogs just want to be nice to their people and devoted to their people. Dogs are the best.
If animals could talk, who would be the rudest?
Roosters.
You are a hero to a lot of pets and animals that you work with. Who is your hero?
Would this be human or animal?
It is your answer.
Well, human, you've got to go with Jane Goodall and all the great work that she has done or did in her lifetime. She just was an amazing person and did so much to enlighten us about animals.
Awesome. Great. Thank you for playing that game of Fetch. So, Adina, you've been working with animals for a couple of decades, and one of your jobs is working in film.
Yes.
So can you explain, what does an animal coordinator do?
So basically, it starts with meeting with the directors for whichever series or movie you're going to work on and discussing what expectations they have for the animals that they want to use on the set, what actions they expect from the animal. And then it's your job to go find those animals, the ones that personality-wise will suit what the director is looking for, as well as aesthetically what the director is looking for. So sourcing the animal. And then oftentimes there's some fine-tuning involved in their behaviors. You may have to make sure that they're happy to be exposed to lots of weirdness, because movie sets and TV sets are weird places with lots of moving parts, lots and lots of different types of people. So you've got to make sure that you've done your due diligence, making sure they've got lots of exposure to weirdness before you take them on set, and then fine tuning any training that you may have to do for the specific behaviors that the directors want.
So that's so interesting, because when I see, you know, the title animal coordinator, I think that you come on set and they're like, here's a retriever who has to go find somebody in a well. But you actually are like a casting director as well for animals.
Yeah. Occasionally they'll say, please use this animal. But 99% of the times that I've worked on set, I've been the one who has, you know, sent a variety of pictures to the director and said, okay, who do you like out of this group? And I, before I send the pictures, I make sure those dogs or cats or whatever they are can do the behaviors that they're looking for. And I usually pray that they are not just giving me an animal that they've picked randomly.
Right.
Yes.
So do you have like a lot of pet momagers who are sending you like headshots?
Well, in my dream world down the road, perhaps when I'm less busy with my other jobs, I would love to kind of start up a group of people who have great pets and start kind of a database going of those pets, and also offer perhaps some classes to get, you know, dogs specifically, because dogs, in my opinion, are the most trainable and usually the highest in demand. Get some basic behaviors that I know are often asked for on movie and film sets established. And so that way I would have a database. Right now it's basically, you know, putting out the feelers that I've got based on over 20 years in the pet industry and knowing the dogs that I know. My wife and I own a menagerie of pets at our house as well. So occasionally I get to select one of my own to put forward. But yeah, just usually it's asking friends and my agility students, do you think your dog would be up for this? And if it's, you know, sometimes they want farm animals. So I've got contact another animal coordinator who deals primarily with farm animals. So I might put the director in touch with that person instead of putting myself forward, because that's not my area of expertise. And I right. always want to do what's best for the production. I want to see the production succeed. So whatever it takes to do that, I try to make that happen.
I know that there is in, you know, Hollywood, let's just say, but I'm sure it's
Hollywood. We're in Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood. Rules for how long kids can be on set. Mm-hmm. Is there the same rules for animals?
There are not. So I have been on sets for many, many, many hours hanging out. And that's, you know, we spend a lot of time hanging out. So I also want an animal that's going to be peaceful on the set while they're waiting around. And then it becomes my responsibility to keep that animal comfortable. Craft services and the other people on set that look after providing shade and providing fans or heat. They, of course, I work closely with them to make sure that the animal is comfortable. But yeah, it can be a lot of waiting around for the animal.
So that's interesting. So does craft services know that animals are going to be on set, and do they have something for the animals?
They often know, and basically all I need from them usually is water. If I run out of hot dogs, maybe I'll be asking for some spare meat that they might have as a reward. But generally speaking, I'm just looking for water from craft services, and then a little bit of help usually with shade. I usually bring a portable fan with me in the summertime so that I can make sure that the dog is kept cool and just keeping them comfortable. I have worked with a snake before, and it was a cooler day. And so snakes, of course, need to be kept warm if you want to keep them moving. So we had a whole rig set up for the snake. The snake was treated almost better than the actors that day with its heat source.
So dogs mostly, but now you just mentioned snakes. Yeah. What kind of, not farm animals, but what kind of other animals have you been a coordinator
for? Help the other coordinator with the farm animal. So, you know, I was seen carrying a pot-bellied pig up a few stairs at one point in my life, while the pot-bellied pig was not very happy with me. One of my favorite animals that I worked with was actually a bearded dragon named Mojo. And he created a bit of an obsession for me with bearded dragons. I ended up getting my own bearded dragon after working with him, because all I could think about was this bearded dragon all the time. So he was super fun. But yes, primarily dogs. Haven't done a whole lot with cats, just a little bit with cats as well. But yes, dogs are my mainstay for sure.
I'm guessing as well, like with a bearded dragon or with a snake, they don't take direction.
Correct. Never. But you've got to, then it comes down to temperament. Have you selected the right bearded dragon who's going to be okay sitting on a stranger's hand? That was the, you know, primary action that that bearded dragon was required to do for that series. Are they going to be okay being removed from their home environment? You know, are they going to, or are they going to stress out? Make sure they don't bite people. You know, that's kind of key. You don't want your actors ending up at a merge because that's going to disrupt your production pretty fast. And the snake, you know, that's just put the snake down and pray that they do what you are hoping they do. Position them and position your cameras and just start rolling and hopes and prayers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does, you know, everybody always asks, like, what does an average day in your job look like?
Well, as I mentioned, lots and lots of waiting around. So it's, you know, hurry up and wait. And so you've got to be content sitting around, maybe chatting a little bit with some of the other people that are working on set, which is always interesting. Usually a lot of interesting backgrounds there. And then you've got to be ready to go. So you've got to be able to go from kind of a mundane feeling to adrenaline might start rushing because now you got to go, 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 get that animal doing what the director wants. There's always time crunches involved with this and usually very little patience for the animals. So you want to make sure everything's going well. The animals are often kind of seen as a prop, if you will. So unlike a lamp, which you can move and it will just stay where you move it, you know, animals are sentient beings that, you know, may or may not feel like staying put that day. So there's a certain amount of pressure when the cameras start rolling.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And I mean, I joke about it here because my job involves, on a very minor level, making like videos with animals.
Yeah, for sure.
There are days those animals, they just look at me and they're like, no.
Yeah, no, the industry joke is always kids and animals. Nobody wants to work with them.
Yeah. How did you discover this job?
As with most things in life, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Of course, it was a little bit of what you know, but the person that became my mentor in this, she asked me years ago if I was interested in getting my deaf border collie who came from the SPCA into a little film that was being recorded because she had the right look, you know, that they were looking for. She was a really cool looking dog. And so, yeah, sure. We did that. And then a couple of years later, she reached out to me again to see if I had a small cute dog that would be suitable for The Good House with Sigourney Weaver that was filmed down in Chester. So I kind of jumped in, you know, to the big end of the deep end of the swimming pool right off the bat on that one. And so I was not obviously the lead animal coordinator on that one. My mentor was, but I got to be on set for every take that they had. I learned a ton from her there and I ended up shadowing her on a couple of other sets and, you know, built up the hours to the point that I was able to join the union myself and start working without anyone else, you know, showing me the ropes because I already knew them.
Do you think somebody needs to have the same background? So, you know, you are an agility coach, you walk with dogs, you train with dogs. Does somebody need to have that background to be an animal coordinator?
They need to have an understanding of how to train behaviors. And they need to also be able to work really well with people because you've got to have a bit of a thick skin sometimes if a director's starting to get frustrated with something or, you know, just taking direction. You need to be able to take direction from people. But yeah, you need to know how to train animals to do things and then how to cue those behaviors on set. Again, working under pressure is really key. So I think there's many ways to get to that point in your life. You don't need to be a dog walker for 20 years. You don't need to be a dog trainer for 20 years, but that certainly doesn't hurt. But you do need to have some type of life experience that is going to help you understand how to get those behaviors and keep them going on set. Yeah.
Or a menagerie of animals.
Or a menagerie of animals in your house that you can just choose from and take to the set.
You talked about the production with Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the projects that you've worked on?
So there was that one. Quite a popular series is called From. That's filmed out in Beaver Bank primarily. And my shepherd, Tamsin, was in that series in the first couple of seasons. And that's proven to be quite a popular show among, you know, Stephen King-esque enthusiasts. Also on the Stephen King front, I've worked, The Bearded Dragon appeared on The Institute, which is a Stephen King film, much of the same crew, same location as From, The Institute is involved with, and also worked another Belgian Shepherd on that one. My little old black mixed dog, we called her a Cape Breton Barn Dog. She appeared on a number of films. Dawn, Her Dad, and the Tractor was one of them. That was a really lovely film by Shelley Thompson. She also did another independent one, and I'm forgetting the name of it right now, but there have been a number of independent movies that have been produced locally that my dogs have appeared in. And most recently, this past year, I worked on a set with Brooke Shields' new production called You're Killing Me. So it's been quite a few different productions over the years. Always a lot of fun. The people that work on set are some of the hardest working people I've ever met. The hours are long, but they generally stay cheerful and upbeat, and it's always a privilege to get on those sets.
So you said that you've had some of your animals involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever, like, do you make like a big deal, you know, of like the premiere of the show when you know that the dog's gonna be on there? Like everybody comes and watches and waits for the dog to come on the screen.
No. No? We like our quiet and solitude at our house. I will sometimes record the show when I see my pet appear on my phone. I might post it to Facebook, but I'm not a huge self-promoter or what the youngsters call influencers these days, that I do not strive to be one of those people. So, you know, I just find a lot of fulfillment in seeing it myself. I don't need to brag too much about it.
So you've worked with, we've talked about some of the animals that you've worked with, some of the sets that you've been on. Which animal, this is kind of like the game of fetch.
Yes.
Which animal do you find has more challenges to work with on a set?
The humans, the human animals. So sometimes the directors, the executive producers don't always have realistic expectations for the animals. Often they go into these things thinking, oh, well, my golden retriever gets super excited when I walk through the door. So I'd like to see a dog get super excited when the actor walks mm-hmm. through the door. Well, that dog has no connection with that yeah. actor unless they've been working together for months and they've gotten lots of hot dogs from that person already. So it's usually the human expectations that are the most difficult to deal with, not the animals.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Fair.
Yeah.
Is there, you know, you just talked about, you know, the dog for the scene called for the dog to be really happy. And I think that we all have in our heads, you know, like a retriever is going to be really happy when you come home. A cat isn't going to care, that kind of thing. So is there a certain breed of dog that is more requested that you feel shows up more in your work than another?
Definitely shepherds. And that's been in my personal experience. And I read an article a year or two ago that confirmed that in the film industry, shepherds are high demand. I think there's a few reasons for that. A, they're generally quite easy to train, willing to work with you. B, they've got a look that can go either way. You can be looking for a guard dog. You can be looking for a family pet, and the shepherd can tick those boxes. So yeah, definitely the shepherds are usually pretty popular.
Have you been on a set where there is multiple animals, you know, with it's being filmed in a setting that's like I would say like a shelter, or have you been on a set with multiple animals, and is there multiple animal coordinators? Like, is it one on one?
Yeah. So when you get into multiple animals, you should always have more than one person there. So I did mention the pot-bellied pig earlier, and on that set with the pot-bellied pig was also a goat, a duck that was sitting in a basket, and a bulldog. So we had on that set the owners of each animal so that they could kind of manage those animals a little bit between takes. And then we were basically there that day, myself and the other coordinator who generally deals with livestock. We were both there mostly giving direction to the owners. Sometimes it was a matter of, you know, taking the basket with the duck in it and us handing it off to the actor and then taking that animal back from the actor again when they yell cut. But yes, the more people, if you've got more animals, you need more people. One person cannot do it by themselves.
No.
No.
And, you know, in Nova Scotia, though you were saying about the fact that it's not like kids, animals mm-hmm. aren't, you know, like kids. And it's not that the animals on set working the whole time. They are, right. they
There's
are
a lot of downtime,
a lot of downtime. Yeah. But, you know, when we see movies and you're talking about thrillers or sci-fi, mm-hmm. Even dramas, yes. There are times when animals are hurt in movies. You know, that's part of the script is right. that they're hurt.
Yes.
I don't watch those movies because they make me sad.
Right.
So that's why I think I'm struggling with the question, because I don't even have like an idea in my head
right.
of what that movie would be, because I don't. And I know that there is a website out there that tells you can put in a movie and it'll tell you what spots to skip over if you don't right. want to see an animal right. being hurt.
Yeah.
But how are those... What is the approach to that? Is it now more CGI?
No, I think it's a lot of training and then movie magic, if you will. So, for example, recently worked on Sullivan's Crossing with mm-hmm. one of my dogs. And they wanted a vehicle to swerve and miss the dog that was running across the road. Guess what? That dog never saw that vehicle. So they right. film the dog, get the action from the dog, and then they film the vehicle. But then when you see it on TV, they've spliced it all together. It looks like it's all happening at the same time. So most of the time, if an animal looks like they're being injured, they've probably been trained to either, you know, if we take horses, for example, bow down on a leg or, you know, tip over. And then they'll splice that with whatever created that action to happen. So I won't get into details because I don't want to upset you, but, you know, whatever caused that animal to be injured, they're going to show that with another camera. Probably the animal wasn't even on set when they filmed the action that caused that to happen.
I will cover my ears. I will close my eyes. I will actually leave the room because I don't even want to hear the sound. So thank you.
No worries.
I just, you work in film and television. And so, you know, the things that when I ask this question, I don't want you to think about the animals that you've worked with. Mm-hmm. But when we are talking about companion animals and pop culture, mm-hmm. who pops into your head first?
I'm going to date myself and I'm going to tell you it's the Taco Bell Chihuahua.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I was a little off put when I realized that that's over 25 years ago that she was on TV.
We've had this conversation. This is what spurred this, is talking about pop culture, because there's five generations in a workplace now.
Yes.
And I could not believe that my colleagues
had no idea
who some of the, and yeah. I just, what do you
little,
mean?
And,
you don't know.
And you know, you mentioned Littlest Hobo. Of course, Littlest Hobo. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about safety on set or rest time on set for the animals. Mm-hmm. What measures, if any, do you think need to be taken or more for animals to feel safe on set?
So the one of my predecessors, I'm assuming, or someone in the film industry actually did work with the SPCA to develop some protocols for animals on set. So things like, you know, if fire is being used in a scene, then the animal is the last one in, or sorry, last one in, first one out. Mm-hmm. Okay. So before all the actors get to leave, the animal leaves just so that everything's calm, cool, and collected while that animal is leaving. And that can also play out on set in general. Often the animal is the last one to arrive to take the shot and the first one out, so that the you know, there's less stuff moving, there's fewer moving parts while that animal is coming and going. You know, care is always taken on set in general to be safe. So, you know, running through a set is discouraged strongly. You know, giving people warnings that you're moving behind them or you're stepping up onto stairs that may shift the weight of something. You know, there's a lot of communication that happens there. But it is the animal coordinator or animal wrangler, we're often called. It's our responsibility ultimately to keep those animals safe while they're on set. And so, you know, if I have to give some direction to some of the other crew that, you know, maybe I had a instance once where I could see where the woman was moving. She was about to step on a dog's tail. So it's like, whoa, you've got to communicate. Stop moving. Okay. Back off. And also, you know, especially with the dogs, but with all the animals, really, they're, you know, it's kind of like going to school with back in the day, having show and tell. Everyone gets super excited to see those animals. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of, again, set some boundaries with people so that the dogs or whatever animal you're working with does not get overwhelmed with everyone wanting to pat them, everyone wanting to talk to them through the day, because that's also tiring for the animal as well. So all of that comes down to the animal coordinator's responsibility ultimately, but someone at some point, I've read the document multiple times. It gets sent out every time I'm going to be appearing on set. The document gets sent out to cast and crew. That was created by the SPCA. So we do work hand in hand, making sure that the animals are kept well.
Thank you. If anybody's listening and they think, my dog's a star.
Yes, as everyone does think. Yes.
who doesn't?
Yes.
What advice would you give them?
So the most mundane behaviors are usually the ones that are most requested. Don't bother teaching 3 million tricks. They are generally not being asked for on movie sets. I've never had to ask for a dog to shake a paw with an actor. Okay. But what they are looking for generally is for a dog that can look like a family pet. Yeah. In a strange place with strange people. Being able to hold a position, whether it's a stand, a sit, a down, maybe a down with your head down on your paws so you look extra sad. Being able to hold that for long periods of time, and then being able to repeat that behavior over and over and over again, because no matter how good your animal is and how quickly they get their part done right, you've got the human actors to deal with as well. Yep. And they might screw up their lines 10 times in a row, and your animal needs to be ready to go those 10 times with the same boring behavior and not get frustrated and not start offering other behaviors. My mentor once compared her dog to a piece of plasticine that she can mold and set into position. And when she sets that dog's legs a certain way, his head a certain way, what have you, he holds that position until the job is done. So it's getting those kind of more boring behaviors, not the sexy stuff, get the boring behaviors and get them done in many, many, many different environments with many, many distractions around. I cannot overemphasize the level of distraction that's happening on set. Again, craft services may be out of the shot, but they may be just on the other side of the camera and they've just brought lunch. And now everyone wants to eat the soup that's over there, including the dog you're working with. So you've got to be able to work with all that stuff going on around you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Adina, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For joining us today and telling us about your job and about, you know, an industry that's quite big in our province.
Yeah, it's an important industry and employs a lot of people and a lot of really great, hardworking people.
And animals.
And animals, too. But sometimes the animals don't realize how hard they're working as long as you give them enough hot dogs.
To our listeners, we believe that your animals are all stars.
They are.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please follow us, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star rating. Even better, share it with your friends and family so we can spread the word together. Now turn up the love for your pets, and we'll see you next time on the SPCA podcast.